News.
New York City.
FAQ NYC podcast getting more and more interesting by the minute.
FAQ.
It's FAQ NYC, the New Yorkist podcast. I'm Katie Honan, here with Dr. Christina Greer and Harry Siegel. Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
In just a minute, we'll be joined by Jeff C. Mays of the New York Times. We'll talk about his reporting on Arva Rice, the interim head of the Civilian Complaint Review Board, one of a handful of people reportedly pushed out of the Adams administration as part of a big reset months before his reelection campaign will go into full swing. He'll also talk about the executive budget the mayor just proposed, undoing some of his own planned cuts. But before that, here's Harry Siegel with just some of the news from an extra jam-packed week in New York City.
Hey, kid. Disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein had his conviction on multiple felony sex crimes overturned by New York's highest court, where the chief judge, appointed by Governor Hochul after the legislature rejected her first pick, spearheaded a 4-3 decision finding the trial judge had erred in letting prosecutors call as witnesses women who said Weinstein had assaulted them, even though he hadn't been charged in those alleged assaults. Mayor Adams and his NYPD were on the defensive this week about campus uproar involving Israel and Gaza throughout New York City that began at Columbia, where an encampment of students returned almost immediately after the university called in the police last week, and has since spread to NYU, the New School, and CUNY's City College, along with other schools nationwide. The head of the city's hate crimes prevention office, housed within the mayor's office, told the Daily News he was fired last week for being Muslim. Assam David has been the executive director of the Office for the Prevention of Hate Crimes since October of 2022. He told the paper, he has, quote, never had this level of disrespect to being sidelined like this. He said he was targeted because of his religion and plans to sue. A spokesman for the Adams administration, perhaps not understanding yet that he might sue, said this in a statement. Following an analysis, it was determined that the important mission of this office should be led by someone who puts bringing hate crimes down first and themselves second. David is one of several high-level Adams staffers who have left or are leaving, not by choice, also including, evidently, Judge Sylvia Hines-Radix, who the mayor's team plans to replace as the city's corporation counsel, main lawyer for the whole city, with former Giuliani deputy mayor Randy Mastro. While they have not yet officially put Mastro up for a nomination, apparently the judge found out she was out. Mastro was coming in from the New York Times story about Mastro. The Adams team was on the offensive last week, hyping the longtime attorney up and even comparing him to John Adams. So we got a lot cooking here, plus a $101.6 billion executive budget proposal from the mayor, restoring $2.3 billion of his own projected cuts, even before negotiations begin in earnest with the city council. Oh, Jeff, hello. Welcome back to the pod. And let's start with Arva Rice and the decision to remove her as board chair, as the CCRB was requesting a larger budget. And just after the NYPD decided, after 5 years in a whole procedural mess, not to punish, including when they got things to the CCRB so they could investigate, the two officers involved in the fatal shooting of Kawasaki Trawick. The mayor talks a lot about his bona fides as a former police officer and a police reformer. Jeff, what's happening here with this decision to remove the head of this review board? And is this part of a broader house cleaning within his administration?
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be back on with you guys. Yeah, I think, you know, what's going on with the mayor and Arva Rice is just interesting. It's fascinating. As you know, one of the main reasons Mayor Adams was elected was because he focused on his background as a former police officer and also as a critic of the police. So he sort of walked this line and he said, I can walk this line where I can keep people safe in the city, but also not violate people's civil rights. You know, we've seen the huge issue with Stop and Frisk and the sort of police squads that have historically violated the rights of mostly Black and Latino people, mostly Black and Latino men. So the mayor has said, look, I can walk that line. Ms. Rice is someone who was a holdover from the de Blasio administration, but the mayor appointed her as interim chairwoman 2 years ago, and she has been interim chairwoman. I also had some indications from my reporting that there was conversations about potentially making her the permanent chairwoman. And, you know, as chairwoman of the Civilian Complaint Review Board, she did what you'd think any chairwoman would do, which is she criticized the police especially about the Trawick killing. She talked about how police, the NYPD, had refused to turn over body camera footage for 18 months, which caused a delay in the CCRB's case. She also was moving to get a bigger budget. You know, they don't have enough staff to cover all of the cases that they get. And in addition, she was working, you know, potentially with the city council to try to get a state law change that limited, you know, police data from being turned over to them on cases that had been sealed. So she had been a very vocal opponent of civilian accountability when it comes to the police. She had spoken about the Trawick case several times, most recently the week before she was asked to resign, and just made it clear that she felt that, you know, the agency needed more in order to hold police accountable. And I don't think police officers and NYPD like that. Phil Banks, who is the deputy mayor for public safety, who we know has a background as an unindicted co-conspirator in a corruption case, is the one who asked for her resignation. But it's clear that couldn't come if that wasn't approved by Mayor Adams.
So in discussing with her, according to your reporting, shifting out of this interim role after 2 years, and I know Adams is still talking about how she can't be the chair, but she could still be on the board. Is this an example, to some extent, of determining, as Lyndon Johnson put it, the people you want inside your tent pissing out rather than outside pissing in? And perhaps that can bring us more generally to some of the other turnover that's happening here inside this administration, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things going on. And I think, as you know very well, Harry, like critics of this administration and of the NYPD have recently felt their wrath on social media. You know, it's kind of unusual. I've never seen that in my years of covering the city and covering the NYPD, that they've just sort of so blatantly gone after their critics in such a public way. You know, many people think it's really a break with protocol. So certainly I think Arva Wright falls within that line. You know, she really was outspoken about what happened in the Trawick case, was really upset. The CCRB's findings in that case were that the NYPD used an inordinate amount of force. They entered his apartment incorrectly. They tased him as well. And then after he was shot, they didn't render aid. So the findings were pretty brutal from the CCRB about how those officers acted. And, you know, Mayor Adams is facing re-election coming up, right? There's the question of whether he has actually fulfilled this promise of A, reducing crime, and then B, doing it in a way that hasn't violated people's civil rights. What we see across the board is an increase and civilian complaints against the police. We've seen a great increase in stop and frisk. We've seen an increase in traffic stops. You know, these are all things that are reminding people of previous eras, namely Giuliani, Bloomberg era policing. And I don't think that's something, that's an idea that the mayor wants out there, that he has returned the city to that era of policing.
So, Jeff, I've got a question. First, I'm a little giddy because I've got like three of my favorite reporters all on the same Zoom. It's great.
Don't butter us up, Chrissy.
I'm just a little excited. I can't help it. But, you know, we talk about the reelection pretty often. And like, on the one hand, is it just us who's thinking about reelection and it's so early? And, you know, it's like, it's next year, June. So many parents have like so much to go through beforehand. You know, like there are all these other things going on. Like some people are just like, I can't even think about 2025. We got to survive November of 2024. But at the same time, and, you know, and Harry and I debated like polls, do they matter? Do they not matter? But it does seem like the base, and you've written extensively about the Black community in the outer boroughs, supporting Eric Adams, understanding that dual frequency that he speaks in about policing, but also community safety and, you know, without abuse. But the numbers are the numbers. And the numbers are saying, we're paying for all these police, but safety in a lot of communities, which are Black and Latino, aren't seeing the benefits. We're still seeing stop and frisk. Again, the numbers are saying Blacks and Latinos, by and large, are the ones being stopped. So we're having a descriptive mayor who said he was going to change all these things. Substantively, he hasn't. It does look a lot like the Giuliani days, even though a lot of white New Yorkers did like that. And I would say low-key, that's how Eric Adams got into office in the first place, because people kind of wanted the Giuliani days back again, post de Blasio, where they felt like he wasn't watching the store, But where are we? Like, you know, in your analysis, you looked at a lot of communities. Do you think that Eric Adams can kind of get his base back? Or, you know, if we see, I mean, Scott Stringer's not going anywhere. No one's talking about him, but he's still not going anywhere. I mean, he could be mayor by default. If Brad Lander or Zellner Myrie or Andrew Cuomo or insert rando millionaire decides to jump in, how serious do you think Eric Adams should be worried about this moment? And don't forget all the legal cases and, you know.
Right. Yeah, I was going to mention that too.
Don't know what the feds know.
Right. That's the first thing we have to say, right? He has these federal potential criminal liabilities out there. He likes to call them a review, but know that he's being investigated by federal authorities, by the Southern District. And these are very serious matters. You know, people close to him, as you know, the city has reported extensively about Winnie Greco and, you know, one of his top aides, one of his top fundraisers, also being investigated. So that's the first thing you have to say. That is a huge liability. Secondly, I think he's already in reelection mode. You know, Katie and I were at a presser last week for a budget rally before he unveiled his executive budget. And it was basically a campaign press rally, right? Lori Cumbo was there, who's like his top booster. She's the Commissioner of Cultural Affairs. But her role in the last campaign was to hype the crowd up. And she was back in campaign mode already. So, and I also think this mayor, you know, being, this is the second Black mayor that New York City has had, only the second Black mayor, I have to say. And it was a good 30 years between Black mayors. I think there's a worry from him that he will be another Dinkins, that he will be a one-term mayor. You know, the sort of comparison started early on about, you know, what happened to Dinkins and possibly happening to Eric Adams. So there is a huge concern. His numbers with the Black community are not going in the right direction. You know, there are a larger group of people that are dissatisfied with his work than in previous months. And look, that was his strength, right? Being able to bring together, you know, Black, Latino, working class, people from Staten Island, you know, white voters as well into that base. But I think the way he's behaving, the way you see, you know, a rally about the budget, it's more about what he's done. You know, it's a regular thing with him where he'll have, you know, an event, and it often falls into a list of him listing what he felt he's accomplished for the city, you know, saying how he's fiscally managed the budget well, talking about, you know, how the city, he feels crime has gone down. There's some sort of contention on how much crime has actually gone down. But yes, I think campaign is at the top of his mind. When you have people announcing, Scott Stringer, who's announcing an expiration, that can't help. So if he is going to win, he's going to have to hold together that base that initially put him into office. And right now, there are signs that base is not necessarily happy with him at the moment.
And you can't be Trumpian just because you keep saying it. That doesn't make it be. Right. So it's not just keep. If you keep saying the city's safe, doesn't make the city safe.
If you keep saying, related to what Jeff was saying, I've thought about this a lot. And I thought about this reading your piece about his sort of reboot and renewal a month ago. Is bringing up Dinkins and the specter of being the city's second one-term Black mayor potentially, I this is something that he's been cognizant of, right? He was around during the Dinkins years, was just becoming a player then. But is bringing this up publicly in this way, is this because he's concerned about this? Is this part of trying to rally part of his base and remind them about that? Is it you know, is that a sword or a shield in some sense, politically speaking, do you think, or both?
I think it's both. You know, I think this will rally his base, right? You have portions of Black voters that are not happy with him at the moment. But I think if you start talking about, you know, this happened to another Black man, right? You know, people may be willing to put aside some of their dissatisfaction in the interest of what they see as racial justice. If he does face indictment, right? You know, there's going to be the question of, hey, look, they're investigating a black man. You know, I totally see that as potentially being things that you will hear. Maybe not the mayor directly, but I certainly think you will hear his surrogates talking about that. You know, already, you know, earlier on in his term, Al Sharpton was talking about, you know, we need to be careful so that we don't have another one-term black mayor. You know, they got together a bunch of black leaders, elected officials to talk about that, ways to work out their differences without them criticizing him publicly. This administration really, really hates when people go out publicly and criticize them. It's something they have not handled well. We see that with the mayor, how the mayor has sort of gone after some of his critics. And we see that certainly from the police department. But in terms of using that idea of the second black mayor being a one-term black mayor, and that being an indication that this city, which I don't think it is as progressive as it says it is a powerful tool. And I would, he's going to use it. Campaign's going to use it. His surrogates are going to use that idea, definitely.
Jeff, it's funny you mentioned the campaign rally because we actually have another one today. It's a housing rally, the City of Yes housing rally. So I'm sure there'll be more cheering there. But I wanted to ask a twofold question. I know you mentioned the mayor and his critics, and I think we can talk a little bit more about not just, obviously we spoke about Arvo Rice, but just reporting of people who've left, whether it's Sylvia Hines Radix, who reportedly has been pushed out, whether it's even the head of the Office to Prevent Hate Crimes. You know, I was sort of surprised. He said to the Daily News that he feels that he was fired for being Muslim. And the mayor's official spokesperson response insulted him, which didn't seem very wise. So it's a twofold question. The first is, how do you think, will you think the insults against his detractors will get even worse? And then secondly, you know, I've said this, you know, Harry has said that, I think we've discussed this, the lower the mayor's poll numbers get, I guess the more desperate he may feel going into this reelection. How do you think they will continue to respond to that? Because I don't think it's going to be pretty. And I think it's going to be very nasty in terms of what they do. I don't know if you have any predictions on those two things. I guess if we can expect even more attacks on his critics and then how that feeds into his reelection.
Yeah, I think they've always been a very them versus us sort of type of administration. You know, the mayor is a former police officer. He's spoken in terms that describe people in black and white, like good guys versus, you know, regular people, you know, bad people. He's used that language to sort of describe, you know, people who just been accused of crimes, right? Haven't been convicted. So I think, you know, they have been divisive in that way and using that language. And so I would be surprised to see that continue. I think the fact that the chief of the department is allowed to go on social media and go after critics, I mean, that's, you know, you guys have covered this too. That's pretty unusual, you know, and it's just such a prolonged period, right? And the mayor has condoned that. He has not, you know, told them to pipe down. I asked him about it directly, and he said, well, you know, you praise in public and you sort of criticize in private. So he has not publicly come out and sort of said that he doesn't like that sort of talk. I think, too, with the sort of departures, of course, you see departures at around this time. It's pretty normal from any administration. And I think we also have to give the mayor credit for hiring a very diverse administration, right? There's a lot of black women who are leading, women of color, you know, Deputy Mayor Williams Isom and, you know, Sheena Wright and his chief of staff. You know, these are all women of color who are leading. I think what's interesting about some of the women of color who've left, you know, you have Arvo Rice, the Corporation Counsel, and then Keyshawn Sewell, the former police commissioner, is that they all sort of felt like they were either being punished for speaking out and doing their jobs, or in the case of Keyshawn, you know, felt like she was sort of being micromanaged to the point where she couldn't make proper appointments where she tried to punish Jeff Madry, the chief of department, for you know, some disciplinary issues, and that seemed to also get overruled. So I think that those are the questions that people are going to be asking. You have a diverse administration. You have a lot of women. You have a lot of Black women. But were those women allowed to sort of do their jobs? Which, and certainly in the case of Arbor Rice, the CCRB, that is certainly her job, is to criticize police, to try to get more money for the agency. Keisha Sewell, certainly her job to be able to make personnel decisions, to make administrative disciplinary decisions. Certainly her job. So, and then Sylvia, the corporation counsel as well. You know, I know there's been some reporting from the New York Post that, you know, she questioned whether the law department should be handling the sexual assault case against the mayor from 30 years ago. Again, that would be another example of someone, you know, a woman put in this position, doing her job, but also bearing the brunt of punishment for speaking out and being an independent voice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been my question. You know, I remember this vaguely with de Blasio, when there were a lot of women of color either jumping ship or being pushed out. And there was like a quiet conversation about it, but it didn't seem as overt as it is this time. And there, you know, some of it is, okay, is it just the natural time period where people leave an administration, right? 2+ years is a very long time. We know being a mayor and working in a city government is like 40 hours a day job, you know, high respect for all the civil servants and public servants who do that. But this does feel different. And, you know, what I didn't like was the visual when Eric Adams was talking about his sexual assault claim, you know, accusation, and he had this galley of women behind him. And the visual is like, well, did they volunteer to be there, or do they have to be there because they are commissioners? It seemed off-putting to me in a lot of ways. And I didn't know, you know, do we have a mayor who's hiring women as window dressing and not empowering them? Do we have a mayor who's hiring women to throw us off the scent of bad behavior when the accusations come? Or do we have a mayor who actually genuinely believes in descriptive and substantive representation and wants to have, you know, the first female police commissioner, the first female fire commissioner, first deputy mayor, second deputy mayors, you know, commissioners here and there? I've got an all-girl band. Who's ever done that? But it's also, it's like, well, the city's not being run efficiently. And it's like, well, it seems like you got a lot of qualified people around you. Where is the leadership? And I think this is the reoccurring question on this podcast for anyone who listens. It's like, who is in charge? And are you letting these women, this was the de Blasio problem, are you letting the qualified people that you have hired be qualified and do their jobs? And how much, A, does the public really care about, you know, sort of women of color being pushed out or leaving? And does this circle back where, is this something that his political opponents actually take advantage of to sort of help get their own female voters? And it's like, well, you know, if I hire women, it won't just be for window dressing or to cover me when I get accused of, you know, sexual harassment. I mean, where are we with this gender conversation with this particular mayor?
Yeah, look, I think it's fair game. If the mayor is going to get up and say, look, I've hired the most diverse administration in recent memory, and that is one of the reasons I'm being attacked. He's said that several times, that, you know, some of the attacks against him are because his administration looks more like the city. So if he's going to use that as a talking point, as a reason to sort of affirm his leadership, it's certainly fair to look at how these people are leaving the administration. And as I said, with those three women, with the police commissioner, the corporation counsel, now with the chair of the CCRB, certainly concerns that are raised there about whether they were allowed to be independent, to criticize the mayor, to, you know, Sylvia is an attorney, right? Like, she's giving her legal opinion. She's not only the mayor's attorney, she's the city's attorney. So she has a sort of broad considerations when she makes these decisions. And if the reporting in the New York Post is correct, I think that would be very concerning if she was questioned because she questioned, you know, the role of the city in defending him. Now, they strongly denied that. They were almost angry last. I think he got angry at the reporter who reported that. Last week, strongly denied that was the case. But I think you're right, Chrissy. I think the question of his management of the city is going to be one of the central issues in the campaign. You already see it. If you guys are on Scott Stringer's sort of email list where he's begging for money, he often talks about the city not being managed well. When he was running last time before his campaign was derailed by the sexual assault allegations, you know, Scott Stringer would say, "I'm going to manage the hell out of the city." That was his sort of catchphrase. So he's certainly going to hit back at that again. And there have been lots of people who've raised questions about management of the city. We look at the budget, for example, you know, a lot of these cuts that the mayor walked back, you know, people thought they were unnecessary to begin with. The independent budget office, the comptroller, the city council said, look, these cuts aren't necessary. We have additional revenue coming in. So the mayor has to answer the question of, you know, why would you make these cuts anyway that are concerning to people, closing libraries, cutting off funding to cultural institutions, you know, educational cuts. I asked the mayor this last week. His response was, you know, he felt a responsibility to the city to be extra careful, given the sort of amount of money that the city was spending on the influx of migrants, and that he felt okay making these cuts and then rescinding them, as opposed to having to come out now and make permanent cuts. Whether that will fly and how that makes him look as a manager, I think, you know, it leaves him open to questioning.
So before we run out of time, I want to make sure we get to the Knicks, of course.
Yep.
It's been a minute. We just touched on the budget. The mayor, of course, gets very upset at saying he made the libraries close on Sundays or any of that. He said, well, I just cut the money, and then they chose how to handle that. And also, I feel like he's been this echo of a lot of the stuff that's come up here. What the deal is with this push to bring in Randy Mastro? You know, he'd been the head of Citizens Union, been a deputy mayor under Giuliani, who's been involved in all sorts of fascinating New York and New Jersey stuff. You know, he did Chris Christie's self-investigation of Bridgegate, for instance, and you work for your clients. The council seems very upset by this. It's a position that actually requires their confirmation now, which is new. But what's going on there? And if this is, in some sense, bringing in a wartime consigliere, as somebody put it to me.
Yeah, it feels like that. You know, if you talk to anybody about Randy Mastro, you know, they'll use terms like bulldog, you know, tough guy, other stuff we probably shouldn't be repeating on the show, other words as well about him. So there's certainly no question that his reputation as a tough, you know, sort of bulldog lawyer precedes him. It's clear the mayor wants that at this time, you know, facing these sexual assault allegations and also facing, you know, as he faces these other federal investigations, you know, he wants someone that he feels he can rely on, someone that can be tough, was going to go out, defend him. And so, you know, the city council, though, you know, even as soon as that was announced, given Randy's background and some of his client roster, just immediately opposition to that. You know, the Black, Latino, Asian caucus, the Progressive caucus, I think the LGBTQ caucus, they've all come out with statements sort of saying that, look, we are not going to support this. And, you know, Adrian Adams, it does not look like the council will support this. They seem to still be pushing forward with this, which is the confusing thing for me. You know, you look at some of these other issues that we had with the sort of policing bill, the police reporting bill, and it was clear that there was no council support to sort of rescind that, that they were going to override his veto. They continue to push forward. You know, I don't know where they're headed with this, but it would seem a difficult road to convince this many council members that they should support Mastro. It doesn't appear like a real possibility, but they still appear to be moving forward with that.
Knicks.
Let's go Knicks.
Yeah, when I asked Jeff about it last, every Knicks fan I talk to, because of the pain and trauma, I asked, I was like, you excited? You were like,
cautiously optimistic.
Every Knicks fan is like, until they, I feel like the Knicks could win the whole thing this year. I'm doing the sign of the cross over Zoom. And the Knicks fans would still be at the ticker tape parade, kind of like,
wait a minute. I got to see the trophy in person.
Yeah, right. I need to see the trophy like hoisted up at the Garden. I don't know, man. You know, I've been a Knicks fan since I was a kid. You know, I'm dating myself here. You know, grew up watching Bernard King and certainly, you know, Patrick Ewing, the 90s where the Knicks almost won it. I mean, like, that John still haunts my dreams.
For 18.
Yes. Game still 7. Haunts my dreams, man. You know, people who can't just dunk a ball instead of trying to lay it in. You know, like, I just.
Mr. Smith.
I'm traumatized from that, you know. So I love what the Knicks are doing, man. Just Jalen Brunson, just incredibly scrappy. His performance yesterday was just. Man, after Embiid made a mistake, you know. Don't give him the elbow. He took it hard, and he took it hard to them. So this is great. This is fun. I love, you know, love sports. There's nothing like when the Knicks are doing well in New York City. It's really a fun time. So I'm gonna keep my fingers crossed. But you know, look, I still got trauma I'm dealing with here. All right, you got to understand that.
I recently showed another reporter who's younger, so wouldn't have seen this, who is also a friend of the pod, the New York, We Are the New York Knicks, Go New York, Go New York, Go video. To watch to see someone watch that for the first time, which is my memory of the Knicks being good. I was telling someone at work last week that I remember I was in Disney World with my family, and a family was head-to-toe Houston Rockets gear. And my sister, I wanted to like say something to the family, but my sister wisely was like, what are you talking about? I was like 8 or 9. And I was like, we should say something to them. We should tell them we're from New York. She was like, why are you trying to pick a fight with this family in Disney World? But I kind of fell off as a Knicks fan. But I love that. I was saying earlier, like, they really straight disrespected the entire city of Philadelphia.
Mm. Embarrassing. Yeah. Weren't they were out there chanting Knicks in 5. I mean, that's a risky proposition. That's a risky proposition in Philly, man. You know, I don't know.
Well, Philly fans can be a little battery-throwing-esque, if you will. But, you know, here's the thing. Just bringing back to politics, and I obviously, with my slight narcissism, ever since I started paying attention to the Knicks, they've been winning. Every game I go to, they win.
Main character syndrome over here.
I mean, just a touch. I am from Queens, just like Eric Adams and Donald Trump and Andrew Cuomo. So here we are. But... I do think if the Knicks win, I think that both Eric Adams in the polls, like a smooth 10 points.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think the connection? What's the connection between
It doesn't Eric matter what the connection is. It's the vibe. It's like the city is winning and he will capitalize on it like hotcakes. And he's just like, we're winners. We're a city of winners. And like, we're hot. That's my little prediction. Harry, I see you pointing. You agree? Disagree?
Oh, I'm grinning. Like politicians love winning sports stuff, love claiming credit. And it is like a vibe shift mm-hmm. when that happens. And our whole last election was a vibes election. That's why, you know, Andrew Yang surged to the top of the polls. He's like, I'm cheerful. I got nice videos. I'm on a roller coaster. You know, vibes matter. Mm-hmm. And a good sports run, that's the vibes.
I mean, it's fascinating you say that because, you know, the type of mayor Eric Adams is, like, he's an outside mayor, right? Like, he likes being out. He likes the nightlife. Yeah. You know, I'm surprised he hasn't done more sports stuff, right? Like, we haven't really seen him at the Yankees games, at the Knicks games. Now that you mention it, I'm surprised he hasn't sort of bought more into that and done more of that as someone who is really like a sort of outgoing, gregarious, I love New York City sort of guy. That definitely helps.
That actually, yeah.
That's a really good point. Was he even at opening day this year? He wasn't at either of the baseball opening days this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty surprising.
Giants games? I think his son is an Eagles fan. Mm. I don't know.
Well, I mean, listen, lots of people who live in Jersey are. Ba-dum-bum.
Ching. Oh. Well, his son grew. Anyway, we'll get to the bottom of the Eric Adams sports fandom. At least he's not a sports fan.
Hey, I got a narcissistic closing question for Jeff and Katie.
I was about to say, it's narcissistic. It must be for me.
So I am 100% not trying to main character myself here. There was a petition like a decade ago that got a lot of signatures and a lot of attention to rename the Williamsburg Bridge after Sonny Rollins. Mm. So his notebooks just got published, which he started keeping in the 3 years when he retired without a word about it. He didn't say, I'm stepping back. From like the pinnacle of the jazz world to like, I don't like where my plane's going. I'm just going to go and play every day on the bridge, rain or shine, 12, 16 hours. I wrote a column about this. I was thinking, hey, this is like a freebie for like Chris Martin, Carolina Rivera, Mayor Eric Adams. This is an easy, popular thing to do, like celebrating a New Yorker. You get to have giants of one of the great American art forms, one of the markers of the city, like survivors of that generation there. Rollins is there. He lives upstate now to appreciate it. Nothing I've seen. I know these people are all busy. It's not like, oh, Harry Siegel wrote a column suggesting that. Let's do it. But it feels to me like there's some disconnect between the stuff our electeds are worried about. Maybe this has to do with who votes and who doesn't or whatever. And like the stuff New Yorkers would actually like. It's just a free play, do an awesome thing, appear with giants and like honor a great New Yorker, Colossus, while he's here. Am I missing something obvious? It's like an honest question. I flirted with reaching out directly to the politicians and being like, what's up? And decided not to because I have so many different hats. I'm an editor here. I'm a columnist there. I don't want to cross lines. But like, I'm honestly baffled why people wouldn't do an easy, cool thing. If anyone has any thoughts on that, I got to ask.
What's the rule, Katie? Do you have to be deceased in order to have... This came up with the...
No, Ed Koch was alive. Right? Mm-hmm. Ed Koch. And that was the whole point. And he had that video going, welcome to my bridge! Yeah. Welcome to my bridge!
Yeah, I'm in favor of doing it while the person is alive. I think I'd be in favor of it. Sonny Rollins is an amazing artist. And the Williamsburg Bridge needs a name. Look, the problem, though, Harry... is, as you know, I still call it the Triborough Bridge.
Me too.
That's the problem. But I guess the honorific would be awesome.
I'm in favor of it.
Jeff for mayor, Katie for speaker.
Ooh, no. I'm totally into it.
I know, politics is too, no thanks, I'm not interested.
No, in Brooklyn, Queens, that's not going to work.
Well, Jeff and I, we can't do the, we all went to high school together, Eric Adams and Adrian. The Adamses have set the standard for mayoral speaker relationships.
I know, can't be that. Can't
undermine
be that.
Behind the scenes, but then in public say, we went to high school together.
I know. Adrian Adams actually saw him skipping school. So like, I can't be that.
She was the witness, yeah. Yeah. Jeff, thanks for coming on. And thanks, for agreeing to ask politicians about Harry's proposal. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, let's ask it this week at the Tuesday presser.
Harry, come to Off Topic Tuesday and ask it.
Ha! Ha!
If they let you in.
I'll come with peanuts then. And popcorn.
All right.
Thanks for having me, guys. This is always fun.
Thanks, Jeff. You're a gem.
FAQ.
FAQ receives support from P&T Knitwear, an independent bookstore, cafe, and event space on Manhattan's Lower East Side, with a podcast studio that can be freely reserved for community use. The pod's friends include The City, a nonprofit newsroom where journalists, including our very own Katie Honan and Harry Siegel, deliver hard-hitting news that serves the people of New York. The Colin Powell School at CUNY City College, where I'm one of the Moynihan Public Scholars inaugural fellows. And Flaming Hydra, a collective of 60 writers, including Harry, delivering a cooperatively owned new newsletter you'll actually want to read. Our engineer is Adam Kamara. Harry's our executive producer. And thank you to Jeff Mays of the New York Times for joining us today. Thank you, dear listener, for joining us and making it this far. Be kind, be cool, and we'll be back soon with more.